Come on, man. There's some beautiful stuff in the Bible. There's some stuff in there you got to admit. It's not what we can call family friendly. Think about it. There's a reason you don't see some of those illustrations in the Precious Moments Bible. You don't see Cain and Abel in the Precious Moments. Isn't that precious? So I'll never understand parents who will paint Noah's Ark on their kids, little kids' bedroom walls. It doesn't make sense. Noah's Ark's a great story, but it's just out there, man. It's like, Daddy, what are you doing? I'm painting Noah's Ark on your wall, sweetheart. My favorite story. You know where God sends a worldwide flood to kill every living thing? Yeah. I love it. It's awesome. Hey, grab a brush and paint some screaming people on that rock for me just to make it real. It's going to be great.
This is often how we present Noah's Ark. Where did my Noah's Ark go? I had one of those just a little. Is it there? Oh, I need that. Thank you very much. Yes. I mean, this is Noah's Ark. Look at that baby. I mean, that's how we think about it. Now, this one is nice enough to even have windows in the back so you can see who's in there. Now, this is going to work really well in a flood, right? That's how we tend to think about Noah's Ark, when in fact, the next slide, I'm having trouble with my text. This is much more accurate in terms of what happened. I mean, women, children, everybody being killed. Next slide. So, the judgment of the flood. That's a good, exciting subject for GES, right? Next slide. We're going to today address why. We're going to take a look next at your knowledge quiz. Hopefully you have taken that quiz to demonstrate your great knowledge of this. We'll be grading it in a little bit. So if you haven't done this, get this taken care of. Then we're going to talk about I'm going to overview the flood. Then we're going to talk about rocks. Actually, I'm going to spend a fair bit of time on rocks here this morning. And then we're going to look at epochs in terms of God being at work. So, next slide. The judgment of the flood. That's the subject that I'm looking at. It doesn't sound like a very encouraging one, but next slide. Let me suggest to you that there's some very good reasons to look at this. Next. What we know from the flood, one of the things that we learn is that we live in a moral world. We live in a moral world. Now, this means that everybody is responsible and accountable to God, whether they even believe in him or not. They are responsible and accountable to him because God not only has the power, but he has the rightful authority to judge the world, which he will do again. And we see that this happened in the past. See, what we see is the justice of God in his judgment. But we see the grace and mercy of God in his deliverance with Noah and the animals. And this historical account of the flood helps us to see God in a powerful way as it previews Jesus Christ coming in the future from Noah's time and seeing his mercy and grace and justice there as well. Next slide. Take a look at the handout that I gave you. I want to address why here a little bit. You'll see why the flood. Well, the passage is very, very clear. God was doing a reset with humanity because mankind was wicked, evil, corrupt, and violent. And it evidently was quite extensive at this point because God was not happy. And so he's going to get out the soap and water. He's going to clean this thing completely off, and he's going to start over with Noah and his family. One of the questions that shows up, go back to the other one, is how extensive was the flood? You know, was it a local flood? Was it a worldwide flood? I'm not going to spend any time on it. I just provided you with the reasons. If you read the text and take it seriously, I think it's crystal clear that it's a worldwide flood. You can read through that yourself. Going to the backside, why were Noah and his family preserved? Why were Noah and his family preserved? Once again, we have some very specific things that God says. We have, in particularly in 6:8, And I think you can go on to the next slide here. It says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, in the New King James. The New American Standard says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Now, this word favor is the Hebrew word there in the New American Standard. This word favor is the word that's translated grace in the Old Testament some 8 times. Now, in the New King James, grace is found 20 times in the Old Testament, New American Standard 8 times, but it's the same word, favor, which is grace. So, next slide. And it says in 6:9 that he found favor, but other things were true about Noah. It says that Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time, and Noah walked with God. I would suggest that Noah's already a believer, and he is walking with God. And so when God comes and talks to him, it isn't that he's coming to know God, it's that he already knows God, and God has an assignment for him. Okay? And he needed somebody that would respond and would be willing to do what Noah needed done, and that was the case for Noah. Next slide. And that's exactly what happened. Thus, Noah did according to all that God had commanded him, so he did. That's exactly what occurred. Next slide. Why? Okay, next. Let's take a look at your knowledge quiz here. Hopefully you have taken this, and I'm going to just step through the answers very, very quickly. I'm going to say number 1, and then I'm going to tell you what the right answer is, either Alpha, Baker, Charlie, or Delta, A, B, C, or D. And I'm going to step through those and do this very, very quickly. So grade your paper, because I'm going to ask you how you did when it's done, okay? Next slide, let me step through these. You can either hear this and see it. Number 1, Charlie. Number 2, Baker. Number 3, Charlie. Number 4, Delta. Number 5, Delta. Number 6, Alpha. Number 7, Charlie. Number 8, Charlie. Number 9, Alpha. Number 10, Baker. Number 11, Charlie. Number 12, it's true and false, and it's false. 13, Delta. 14, Delta. 15, Alpha. 16, Baker. 17, Delta. 18, Delta. 19, Delta. And number 20 is false, because Mount Sinai is not where the Ark landed, as the question says. Okay, that was very fast. How many of you got 100% on this quiz here?
Out of the 3 that I did.
Out of the 3 you did, you got 100%. Very good, very good. 100% on his 3, that's outstanding. Okay? We tend to think we know a lot of the details and don't necessarily know the details, and this was designed for you not to get 100% on this, by the way. So anyway, there's a lot of information here. There's all this information, and I'm not able to. We don't intend to cover all the details. I'm very much going to overview stuff. Next slide. Okay, now I'm really going to overview the flood very, very briefly. And so looking at the flood, the centerpiece of it is the Ark Encounter. How many of you have been to the Ark Encounter in Kentucky? Yeah, quite a number of you. Isn't that place great? If you haven't been there, you should make a trip and see this thing. Next slide. We've been there, and it was outstanding. Next slide. Now, the flood, overviewing it, there's the start, and it rains for 40 days and 40 nights. The water peaks out at 150 days. Sometime later, Noah is on land with the ark. The ark is now stationary, and it's just sitting there. And then the water is receding. And finally, Noah saw dry land. And then at 377 days, they depart from the ark. Now, if you were looking at the level of the water, let me show you a guess as far as what happened. Might have been something like this, because it did peak out at about the 150-day mark, and then it went down, so that, and then they departed from the ark. Next slide. Now, there, in terms of the chronological details, there's a book called Grappling with the Chronology of the Genesis Flood. It is 828 pages long. It's a paperback that costs $50. I do not own it, and I have never read it. But if you are into details, I'm just telling you this exists for those of you that might be interested in this. I don't even have it, and I've not read it. So I'm taking big picture here, not the details. So if you ask a super detailed question about the chronology of the flood, I'm going to point you to this book, because I'm certain with all those pages, it's got an answer in there somewhere. Next. Now we want to, next slide, we want to look at some rocks. I told you we're going to spend a little bit of time on rocks. Next slide. One of the most majestic places to see rocks is the Grand Canyon. How many of you have been to the Grand Canyon? Yeah, very high number of you. That's, you know, I remember before I saw it, my wife was saying, you know, we should go see the Grand Canyon. I'm like, you know, it's a hole in the ground. Why do I want to go see a hole in the ground? And I had no idea till I arrived there, and I'm like, oh my word, look at this thing. It's phenomenal. And it is, and it is. And so the Grand Canyon is a pretty impressive rock, and you get to see all the sedimentary layers and things that are there. Next slide. And it's diagrammed like this, and you have the various sandstone, shale, limestone, composite rocks, etc., for a geological column. It is the place on the planet where you can see the most layers of the geological column at one time. It's one of the reasons why it's significant. Next. I live in Utah, and I was hiking with Dr. Craig McClung. This is called the Corona Arch. We were doing this a couple weeks ago, and so... Next slide. For those of you that live in the sovereign nation of Texas and rarely travel internationally, Utah is over to the left there. That's where it is, kind of there over there. Okay. And then in terms of Utah, I live up near where it says Salt Lake City, kind of down the bottom right is a place called Moab. Moab and Green River are next to each other. That's where Craig and I went hiking. We go hiking frequently, my family, and he joins us next.
Good morning, Grace Evangelical Society attendees. My name is Craig McClung. I have a PhD in geology, and we're here today in beautiful Green River, Utah. I'm standing here in a modern-day river gully looking at a beautiful sequence of fluvial rocks, of river rocks. Now, what's important here is this unit is probably 10 to a few hundred years old, but I can't tell you because there's nothing here I can date. So, what is key here is to understand how I know this is a river environment. So what we're looking at here is at the base of this river gully is coarse material, pebbles, there's a big boulder behind me. And then looking at modern day rivers, what this tells me is we've got fast moving water, and these pebbles, cobbles are being deposited here as that fast-moving water starts to slow down, just slightly. And then as that fast-moving water continues to slow down, it becomes slower and slower and slower, modern-day rivers tell us it gets finer. So we're going from coarse pebbles, boulders, into gravel-sized material, up here into more coarse sand, ultimately into fine sand. Then right at this boundary, boom, we see a sharp break. This first unit has been cut. And once again, we see coarse pebbles, boulders, which again tells us this quiet water environment, now it's fast moving again, and we're seeing this coarse material deposit out. And this again, we see it grades up, particles get finer and finer and finer until a fine sand. So now we see here, this fine sand continues to grade upwards, 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 ultimately into very fine sand, up into basically mud at the top. So our river system has gone from fast moving all the way to a quiet little trickle. So interpreting this sequence here that I can relate to a modern river helps me to now go out into the ancient environment, interpret the rocks, what I see there, to identify how they were formed.
I asked Craig to give me a typical explanation of what happens with strata and deposition in terms of layers, and he explained this is how it happens and how we understand it. Next slide. So what happens in Utah is that there's a lot of rocks. Now this happens to be a piece of sandstone. this little guy here, and you'll see that there's little layers there. What is the next slide? I don't want to go to the video yet. Is there one more? Yeah, right there. Okay. Now, this is too small for you to see, so we're going to give you your own rock, okay? So, time for some rocks. I'll distribute at the front. I've got the Davis family assisting me. They will... Now, although there's biblical precedence for throwing rocks, I'm not going to. We're going to hand them. I do throw handouts sometimes, but I won't throw rocks. But I'm asking that you reciprocate on the situation in terms of the rocks. So we almost have. There should theoretically be. Oh. You get extra. The reason I want you to see these rocks, Craig and I specifically hunted for these and carried out rocks from our hiking the last time we were in Moab, and so these are Utah rocks. What you should see on all of them, there's some people here who don't have any rocks, so thank you. Maybe married couples are going to have to share a little bit or something. What's going to be true on all of these rocks that I'm handing out, you should have a rock, and you should be able to see these lines. That's the thing I want you to see, are the lines on these rocks. So, are you all still have rocks? Yeah, keep handing out rocks there. We still have rocks, it looks like, so that's good. You raise your hand if you didn't get a rock. We'll see if we can get that taken care of. Okay. Your handout, and you can trade them if you didn't get the kind of rock you want. Talk to somebody else and trade your rock to get the rock that you like, okay? There are big ones and small ones. That's how it goes. Okay, I'm going to have Dr. McClung explain what you're looking at again. So next slide.
Well, welcome back. As we saw in Green River, where we saw the ancient strata in the cliffs there, here I have a sandstone coaster, which David uses to put his Dr. Pepper on. And in here, we see exactly the same thing we saw in the cliffs there. So now let's have a look at these strata in detail. So what we see here are three different strata layers. So at the base here, we have this dark layer, and we can see the various layering in here. We call it laminations. And then we see this very dark band here. That dark band represents a gap in time. Now, that gap in time can be anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 million years. Who knows? God knows, we don't. But we can then see that truncates some of these layers. It cuts them off. Then we see a second period or a second event of layering here, and that represents a continuous period of time, a continuous period of deposition. Once again, that's cut here by another dark layer, which is cutting across some of those. That's, again, we're missing a gap. There's a gap in time. We're missing time. And then we see another series of layers here, but they're dipping at a different interval here. And again, this represents another continuous period of time. So in this coaster, we can see three events with two gaps in time.
On yours, you won't have any dark lines. You just have laminations. And when there's laminations, all of that happened at the same time. And it's called sandstone because it used to be sand and probably was caught up in fluid and water and transported and laid down in laminations. And you should have some laminations in the little sandstone that I gave you. Okay, now I'm going to talk about kind of these two together, the rocks and the flood, bringing these together. I'm drawing up most of my information from Dr. Andrew Snelling with the flood and the Grand Canyon and some other places as well. You can go to Answers in Genesis to find answers for all kinds of stuff. Now, I've tipped my hand with Answers in Genesis. I am a young earth, literal creation person, okay? That's the perspective I come from. Now, everybody in this room does not come from that perspective, so I hope that you will be gracious with me for holding that position, but that's what I'm holding, and I, in return, give you permission to be wrong, okay? That's what we're going to do. So let's proceed here. The storyline goes like this. Both secular and creation geologists look at a time when there was a single continent, Rodinia, that was together. And this would have been at the time of the ark. And God was able to bring all the animals from this single continent. And he was the one that brought them, by the way. Noah didn't have to go get them. God brought them to the ark and brought them onto the ark. And then next slide is the key phrase, very cryptic and brief, but it says the fountains of the great deep burst open. The fountains of the great deep burst open. Now, we understand this to be worldwide. In the oceans, on the land, the fountains of the great deep burst open. We're talking fountains. Stuff is coming up. Stuff is coming up, and it's coming up all over. Next slide. And so as a result, there's going to be a breakup, and they believe for whatever reason, and I never did find the details of this, that the continents were kind of moving and the continents were splitting, but they rejoined as Pangaea, and then they began transitioning out, not over millions of years, but in this one-year period of the flood. I mean, we're talking catastrophic plate tectonics that's taking place, very, very rapid, just massive things, massive continents just moving. Next slide. But what we have is the bursting forth would include magma coming up, like on an ocean floor, for example. And think about this for a second. It's coming up, and there's the Great Atlantic Rift we have even today, and it's bringing magma up, and it's covering the ocean floor. And when a volcano takes place, the majority of what goes up in the air is water. Most of it is water. It's a whole bunch of other stuff, but most of it is water, moisture and water. Now, think about this for a second. What happens if there is a earthquake or a volcano in the ocean? What's generated? Tsunami. Let's take a look. This is a little one. Stuff is moving. Next slide. And so what is proposed from a literal creationist perspective is that massive tidal waves and tsunamis are coming from the oceans, not to mention the rainfall. The water level is rising, ultimately, even over the mountains. But don't think of our present-day mountains when you think of the water going over 15 cubits over the top of the mountain. It was a totally different geography, totally different geography. And so what happens is you have these small marine animals that, with the tsunami, are just being brought up onto the continents, just spread across the continents. I mean, you take this sandstone, for example. This sandstone layer that you see, like in the Grand Canyon, it covers most of the United States, most of the contiguous coverage. It has an odd shape, but it's massive. So we understand that this is something on a scale we have a tough time even imagining, bringing all this material and just laying that thing out and laying it down as a layer. Next slide. Oh, I meant to comment on this now. Thank you. So for example, I'm hiking. My wife and I are hiking near Santa Fe, which is where she's from, and I'm up at over 8,000 feet, and I'm finding seashells in the rock where I'm hiking. What in the world are seashells doing up on a mountain of 8,000 feet? Well, because it didn't always used to be at 8,000 feet, and it was laid down. It was laid down that way. Okay, next one, let's take a look at the power a little bit to move stuff. Those are called mobile homes. Now, this is a different tsunami here, but look at the force, people trying to dodge this thing. I want to see the houses again. Back it up. I like that mobile house thing. And notice, you can't even see that thing coming. This is just little. We're not talking the stuff of the flood. But yeah, watch those houses. The power to move stuff, just amazing. What if God made tidal waves from it bursting from that would cover the entire continents. That's very likely what happened. Next slide. Is this little guy here. The other thing that's so powerful, I'm only going to make a passing comment on this, is for fossils to take place, they have to have rapid burial. I mean, they can't just lay there for millions of years and all of a sudden turn to fossils. It just absolutely, physically cannot happen. They got to be buried rapidly. So next slide will zoom in just a little bit. So here's a new addition I got, my little fish guy, which is what the picture is that you're looking at. But this guy was buried fast and died and was fossilized. It's the only way it can happen. It's the only way it can happen. And there's tons of fossils, especially for marine animals. And the other thing that happens with fossils is we see them moving from marine life and smaller animals up to larger in terms of animals and people and so forth would have been able to move away as the waters were rising. And there's my little trilobite guy. Can zoom in on him. Yeah, that's this guy buried in mud, and we don't have trilobites today, but God made them. They did exist. Okay, next. So here we have the strata or the geological column. I want to propose and suggest to you, here is at least one creation model. Each one of those strata represents, or on top there, every one of those strata represents a major tsunami, earthquake, volcano movement of water and materials being carried across the continent and deposited. That's where you get these layers, not millions of years of time. You have these events that take place and deposit this stuff. And the great unconformity, which is very identifiable in the Grand Canyon, is a line that probably represents the distinction between pre-flood and post-flood. Okay? And back up for just a second there. You'll notice on the bottom that they're at an angle. Okay? But if everything burst forth, that's what you would expect to find, is at an angle. And then when stuff is sheared off and deposited, then you expect to find the layers. It's exactly what we see in the situation. And so I would propose, this is what the model suggests, is that those layers will represent one tsunami of a whole bunch of material coming being deposited across the continent. And then from another angle, another big tsunami and so forth, tidal wave takes place, and another layer of material is deposited. And then something from another direction happens, and you get these layers. And that's what we're looking at. Next. So the unconformity is where the distinction is for pre-flood versus post-flood. The other thing that's distinctive about the Grand Canyon, of course, is we can see it. A whole bunch of this is under the United States already. North America, I shouldn't say, not just the United States, but we don't see it. Well, here it's carved out. So the model that is proposed is that after the flood, there was a large lake that covered much of the western United States with water, and it was sitting there for a while, and at some point it breached, and ka-pshoo, just like it got flushed, just washed that Grand Canyon right out, went through there, probably before these rocks were as hard as they were, and just carved that thing out. That little river didn't do it. The little river didn't do it. Next. So from a naturalistic worldview, the present is the key to the past. From a Christian worldview, the catastrophic events of the past are the key to the present, particularly the flood. The catastrophic events of the past are the key to the present. A different perspective. Next. Okay, next, I want to talk about epochs. How much time do I have left? Not much. Okay, epochs. Let me introduce this idea to you because I think it's worthwhile. Next. It's on the backside of your handout there. You'll see the little diagrams. Next. Epochs represent time frames where distinctive things are happening. For example, the creation epoch of 7 days, what was happening with physics, biology, geology, climate, anything else you want to list was completely distinctive for that time period. Next epoch, we're in the Garden of Eden. What's happening with the people genetically, biologically, with climate, with geography, is once again distinct. Next slide. Then we get to the antediluvian epoch. This is where I thought Ken Ham should really be, so I put him there. I thought he fit. Antediluvian, and as we've already seen, this was a time period when people lived a long time, okay? But this is out of the garden, out of the garden. And it's about 1,700 years before we hit the flood. And then, of course, what's happening during this 1 year of the flood, once again, completely distinctive, completely distinctive. What's happening with climate has never happened again. Okay, the physics, plate tectonics, geology, all of these things were distinctive for that epoch. Next. So we have this flood, and then after the flood, Arphaxian. Now, Bob made reference to this. Just go through a couple slides here. Keith Wise references this. This is excellent material, by the way, is Genesis history. Next. Next, he's mentioned in Genesis 10, lived 438 years, mentioned in Luke. So he lived about 438 years, and he was born like, 2 years after the flood started. So Keith Wise is saying that that is an epoch as well because the earth is recovering from this traumatic event. And actually, he suggests that we're still recovering from it. We have earthquakes, we have volcanoes. Those are indications of us still recovering from this flood. And so that's a key period, 438 years, then we follow it by the modern epoch, which is what we presently live in now, which makes for a very interesting situation. The laws of physics, geology, and everything else that are in the modern epoch, it's a little presumptuous to now say the way things work now is how things have worked in every other epoch. That's not the case. That is not what has happened. Okay, now there's really some basis for this. Next slide. It cuts down like this. Next slide. About 80% of it. I'm keying off of Ken Boa, similar diagram to what Bob put up. Notice the drop in the lifespans. So it's not imaginary. So something has changed genetically, environmentally. By the way, lifespans are more connected to genetics, not to environment. Next. And so that's the... that's this epoch right there that we're talking about, where a lot of change takes place. Next. And so we should not presume or assume that those epochs have the same physical laws, chemistry, geology, and everything as the one we're in. It's very much presumptuous. Next, we are going to have a couple more epochs. The tribulation epoch is going to not be like today. This is going to be different. Then there's another one, the kingdom. Genetics are obviously changing there. People are going to live a long time. Antediluvian time spans, perhaps. Next. As we look at all of this, next slide, I want to suggest to you that the point that's on the back of your sheet is that as we look at the geological strata and the fossils, they are witnesses or monuments to the authority and power of God to judge his world again. That's how 2 Peter talks about it. That's how he talks about it. So when you see the geological, when you come to Utah to go hiking and you see the geological columns and you pick up sandstone and you see the laminations and you see the strata if you go to the Grand Canyon, you should be responding and saying, that is telling me about the authority and power of God to judge the entire world, which he is going to do again. And that's how you should think about it. Okay, next slide. But that doesn't leave out grace. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. As a believer in Jesus Christ, you can put your name in there. David found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Just put your name in there. That's where our hope is. And God delivered, by the way, significantly. And he can do that for us as well. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, we want to thank you that you have recorded what happened and that we can learn from it and be reminded, not only do you have the power, but you have the authority to judge us. We do live in a moral world. We are accountable to you. But our hope is in your favor, in your grace, and your goodness. It's the only place we can find hope. But we thank you for the hope of Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.